podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Tony Cotti, and you're listening to the We Are West Ham podcast.
You are listening to the We Are West Ham podcast. This time, unfortunately, not live from Germany, but live from London. At least 50% of this afternoon's podcast are live from London. The other half is back in Bonn in Germany. It's Kevin Schuren, German podcaster and journalist, and most importantly, Bayer Leverkusen fan, champions of Germany. What a feeling, Kevin. Delighted to have you with us. We were talking, of course, about Thursday night's Europa League second leg quarter final at London Stadium. But let's be honest, I can't start anywhere else other than the fact your team won the Bundesliga for the first time ever on Saturday with a thumping 5-0 win over Werder Bremen. Granit Xhaka getting on the score sheet. Victor Boniface, the one who got the second goal against West Ham, getting a penalty. Florian Wirtz with a hat-trick. I can only imagine what you must be going through the last few days. I was delighted when you sealed it, despite you telling us last week you haven't won anything yet. How are you? How does it feel?
Now I can have all the feelings I had inside me when we talked last week. It's indescribable. I don't know. I hope for every fan that you will once have that feeling that your team wins a championship, because it's something else, especially if you win it in your own league. For us, we talked about the difficult circumstances concerning our standing in Germany from time to time. All the people that laughed at us. Now I think some of them laughed with us. So many of them were happy that we won the championship. But for me, it was just an overload of emotions. I cried, I screamed, I laughed, I cried again. I cried some more. it was the pitch invasion was something else. I thought there would be one, but I had no idea how much of an impact that would make also on pictures and stuff. And the game was just great. Everything was great. The weather was great. I'm so happy. I could cry again. It means so much. It really means so much. And to have it now secured, it's for me personally. And I have a privileged life as a journalist. I get to travel a lot. I get to see a lot. And but this is the greatest moment, single moment of my life. I don't have any kids. So this will be something else as well. You know, when you have your first child, of course. But for me, this is personally the greatest moment. That was the greatest moment of my life. When the referee, the game ended too early. it's half, yeah. Half a minute early, but I think it was okay. But the moment that this was done, this was just the greatest moment of my life, yes.
Yeah, amazing stuff, mate. You've done an excellent job of describing it there. I mean, I was delighted. Some of the pictures I saw on your social media profiles, Twitter and Instagram, of you on the pitch, just looking completely overcome with the emotion of the situation. And I had my dad texting me, "God, did you see the result? Kevin must be delighted." People from all over the place. I just think everyone likes an underdog story, don't they? The way you've done it. I've been anyone who will listen since the game last Thursday talking about how impressive you are and how it's far more entertaining to watch than Manchester City. It's obviously Xabi Alonso has been schooled in the Pep Guardiola way of thinking. But what I admired and what I loved the most was that you're good at keeping the ball. There's lots of Pep similarities, but you're so much more exciting in the final third and so much more, almost chaotic, but it's kind of deliberate chaos and it works. And I think the story as a whole ended Bayern Munich's grip on the German title. And I think that can only be good for German football, really, and its reputation around Europe, because people have been writing off for a long time saying, oh, well, it's boring. I know Dortmund kind of lost it last year rather than Bayern Munich winning it. But it's good for German football. It's a good story for all the real football fans around the world, who, especially the underdogs, if you've got a genuine interest in sport that isn't attached to finances or any sponsorship or anything like that, like the people at the top of a lot of football clubs do, for the football fan, man, woman or child in the street, no one, unless you're a fan of Bayern Munich, can really look at that, and probably Cologne, I imagine, but can really look at that and go, I'd rather buy Munich won. No one's going to think that. And I think it's an absolutely incredible feat. And I can only imagine what that must have been like. Well, fortunately, we obviously won the Conference League in Prague. It's a different scale of achievement. I will completely admit that. So to do what you've done is absolutely incredible. I've ended up finding Prague a little bit overwhelming, to be honest. Do you feel like you've been able to drink it all in and absorb it? Because it just felt, for me, I just felt really overwhelmed with the whole thing in the end. It seemed a bit just like surreal, and I didn't really know what to do with myself. I was almost like, couldn't really compute what had happened. But you seem to be taking in your stride a bit more, and perhaps some of the joy has sunk in. Is that maybe because you've seen it coming for a while, perhaps?
No, because once the moment is reality, everything... I don't know if a weight is falling off of our shoulders is the right metaphor for this, but in a way it is, because I, for myself as a fan, I was a fan in 2000. I was an even bigger fan in 2002 with all the championship we've lost. The near misses. 2009, the cup final in Germany where I was, it was difficult for me, but I have to be honest, no. I'm not able to compute it yet. I think this will change, because it's such a whirlwind of emotions for me, because there are so many aspects of emotions I have inside me. This will become a reality once we had the final match day and we get to see the team with the cup, with the title, you know, when they are standing in front of us and they're holding the title then to us. I think then it will be 100% there, because right now it's just an abstract emotion that we wanted, but we don't have anything in our hands. You know, we have like little cups made of paper and stuff, and we had. I took a picture with one, you know, but it's
not, I saw that. Deal, yeah.
You know, it's not the real deal. It's not the one that the team will have after the final match day. And there is still a lot to do, you know, which is so interesting, because yes, we are celebrating it, but we know on Thursday we play against you, and we want to go on to the next round and play against Milan or Rome. And then we want to go to Dublin and win the Europa League. We want to win the German Cup. We want to win everything we can win. So it's just too much to be able to compute this in two or three days. And one thing I want to say, what you said earlier, and this is the beautiful side of all of this, it's not so much the press and what fans think in Germany, but it's what I read from European newspapers and from European fans, you know, even British ones, Spanish, Italian. Everybody is amazed by what we've achieved over this season. And I think that is the biggest compliment we can get, that we get the recognition, the acknowledgement from all over Europe, from all over the world. And that is something that really makes me proud. You know, it's not only that in Germany we showed the people that we can do it. I knew we can do it. There was stuff to do inside the club that I told you last week, that brought us to this situation right now. But to have people from all over Europe really acknowledging what we've achieved is really a big compliment, and even a bigger compliment than national press or national fans saying yes, they've done it.
It's honestly, it's absolutely incredible, and I couldn't really be happier for you. And because this is what my stance always is, and I get a little bit of grief for this sometimes, right, in England. Now, I always value, think of a team or value an achievement based on what it means to the fans. So people in England don't like Manchester City winning the league. I really enjoy Manchester City doing well, because the fact of the matter is that real fans of Manchester City have been fans of them for years and years and years. And most, or certainly fans of my age, right? So any fan of my age of Manchester City who supported Man City as long as I've supported West Ham, they were getting 30,000 people in their stadium when they're in the fourth tier of English football. Like, they are a club supported by a real large core of passionate fans who love Manchester City. So, you know, whereas Arsenal and Liverpool, Manchester United they haven't been like that for a long time. They sort of got used to success, almost have got, you know, ridiculous illusions of grandeur, particularly Manchester United at the moment. And even when Chelsea were doing well, everyone of my age who's supporting Chelsea was going to Stamford Bridge when they were just as rubbish as West Ham are, or just as average as West Ham are. And they still love their club. They didn't love their club because of the success. I appreciate there'll be a modern generation of fans, both those teams, where that's inevitable. Success will bring new fans and stuff like that. But I always look at it and go, well, look, they're real fans there, a real club. It's not their choice who the big rich nations overtook them, or Roman Abramovich, the big Russian. It's not their fault or their choice that billions got pumped in and it's a bit of an unorganic win. But I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's what makes the Leverkusen story even more magical, is that it doesn't seem quite as artificial as when Chelsea or Manchester City succeeded in England, because I've no doubt you spent some money on some big name players, I'm sure, but it doesn't, and correct, do tell me if I'm wrong, but it doesn't feel as sort of purchased as some of the successes we're used to seeing in England by the historical underdogs.
Yes, it's totally correct, because that's what I mean by people misunderstand. I don't think people, if people want to misunderstand what we are in Germany, it's fine. But we are much more than that. We are much more than a company coming in and just paying ludicrous amount of money for players and for coaches and everything. What we have in Leverkusen is different in the way that that I know the club and that I know how finances are spent and that I know how structures are being put in place to have success. And yes, of course, a lot of money was spent in the late 90s and early 2000s. But that was necessary to put us on the map and to be able to contend for a championship. But you need to be ready to be able to win a championship. I mean, Leicester showed it. There might be a fluke year, but what's basically happening is that you see when a club is really ready to win a championship that is not inside the top three or top four in a certain league, they will win the championship, because there will be the year that you have the string of success you need to win a long haul championship. And in Leverkusen, it's like over the last few years, I mean, we had a difficult situation after the early 2000s, because a lot of money was spent and they need to consolidate the club and consolidate the structures. And we had rough years. And I mean, at the end, of course, it's not a romantic story of football. We don't need to lie to ourselves, because we are sponsored and funded. I mean, the name is on the shirt, you know, at the end, company behind it. But it's always a difference if you see like a company like Red Bull coming in and purchasing a small town club in Saxony and basically putting this club into a city of Leipzig and saying that this is RB Leipzig right now, which is okay. It's modern football in the end. But what Leverkusen did, I mean...
It is sort of soulless, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean...
It's just manufactured, isn't it? Which isn't what sport is about.
Yes, it's manufactured. And at the end in Leverkusen, I mean, you saw it last week. I mean, this year is special. You know, we also have the people that are only Leverkusen fans for 3 months now because there was a chance of us being the champions and it's nice to have the shirt of a champion on. But that's another story entirely. But what you see in Leverkusen is just a tight-knit group of fans working together for a big goal. And this all comes down from the club, like from top down. And it's different. It's very much different. And if people would be a little bit more objective, and that's the only thing I want from people, to be a little bit more objective and to not be as stubborn in the way Leverkusen is treated, like different clubs that are telling different stories, I think everybody would be much happier because there is so much more to this club than just money from one company. It's part of the story and it's the main story because it's the name of our club. But there is so much more, and what I don't like is that people tend to discredit what we've achieved, just saying, yeah, it's like the downfall of modern football that Leverkusen is now champion. I mean, what's in it for you to tell someone who is the fan of a club since? I mean, we came into Bundesliga in 1979, and we've never been relegated. So the big money was spent like in the late 90s. So we had 20 years basically that we worked to stay in Bundesliga. And now in 2024, I mean, if you do the math yourself, you can see
quite a long-term investment, that, isn't it?
Yes, I mean it's a big time span. Normally, you would say like if a company like Red Bull or an investor from Qatar or anyone is coming in. They want to see results immediately. They want to be champion in like 3, 4, 5 years. And Bayer Leverkusen is now, for the first time, I mean, we are celebrating 120 years of Bayer Leverkusen. The Bundesliga exists since 1963, and we've come up to Bundesliga in 1979, and we are champions for the first time in 2024. So you can see it's much more... There is a better foundation at the end of the day than you will see with any investor club. And it's not our fault that other clubs are not as successful and are not able to attract big sponsors who will help because modern football doesn't work just from air and love. You know, you need to work, you need to have money, you need to spend money, of course, to get the good players. But you cannot come in and say, I mean, everything needs to be so romantic and we should play on clay again. No, that's not how it works. Because West Ham moved from a smaller stadium to a bigger stadium because of what? Because of the change.
Don't remind me. Yeah, because of our ridiculous owners.
Yeah, sure. But what does it do? It puts more revenue into the pocket of the club that hopefully is reinvested into players, into a successful team over the years. Huh?
It also sucked a lot of the magic out of going
that's,
to football.
Yeah, that's
for,
the other
for
side.
Me and for loads of fans. Like they, you know, it's not just as
but there's yeah, it's not always black and white. That's what I mean, you know. I mean you will have elements of things in your club that you will not like.
Just give me an idea then, Kevin, of the sort of, you know, for people who are wondering or criticising, whatever, just give me an idea of the level of, like, spending both on transfers, say, last summer and your wage bill. Like, we're in the Premier League, West Ham rank about ninth, I think, for wage bill and average transfer spend most years. Like, you know, you've obviously got Manchester City and Liverpool and Arsenal and Manchester United at the top, and then clubs like Luton and Burnley and Sheffield United at the bottom, and teams, you know, typically tend to kind of finish about where the spend dictates that they will in the Premier League. Where do Bayer Leverkusen rank in the Bundesliga as far as, you know, total outlay in a typical season for transfer fees and wages, like as a combined sort of thing?
I mean, it depends on what needs to be done, you know. This season it was a little bit more. We spent at the end like 81 million okay. euros, and we got 69. So we had a deficit of 12.
What was the big sale?
Moussa Diaby.
Oh, right. Okay.
Who went to Aston Villa?
Right.
Yeah, that was a big sale. But the year before, we had Kai Havertz going to Arsenal, which is also paying into what we spent. And
so, where did he go? Was he at Leverkusen, then Chelsea, then back, then Arsenal?
He went to Chelsea, and then from Chelsea he went to Arsenal. Yeah, sure.
Right. Yeah, so typically running a 12 million loss is hardly like irresponsible spending. What about your wage bill? Is that, would you fall below? Obviously, everyone assumes Bayern Munich is the highest one. Do you then fall below Dortmund, or, you know, where do you fall wage bill wise?
I would say we are the third most expensive. We have the third most expensive squad in the.
Yeah.
The Bundesliga after Bayern and Dortmund, yes.
Yeah, as far as salaries go, what you're paying.
As far as salaries go, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. So, I mean, look, that's what I say. When West Ham are about ninth in that league table. So when we finish sixth and seventh, it shows what a great job the manager's doing by helping the club to punch above its weight. What Xabi Alonso's done at Leverkusen, especially winning it with sort of so much time to spare, albeit by Munich. Probably had a smidgen of a dip year, but even if they were on top form, it would have been some sort of tight race. Listen, Kevin, we have got a bill. I couldn't have let you go without talking about that. So I'm delighted for you. But we must talk about the Europa League. Last Thursday, you were really welcoming and I really enjoyed our chat we had in your lovely home city of Bonn on the banks of the Rhine. Sun was out, they all seemed right with the world. A few of the commenters on YouTube delighted in the fact that I was eating chips during our interview. a couple of beers all seemed right with the world. And to be quite honest with you, up until I would say the 87th minute of the game at your home stadium, your wonderful home stadium as it is, it weren't even that. I didn't even realise, first time I've looked at the actual timing of the second goal, it was the first minute of stoppage time. Victor Boniface got the second. And it was that second that broke my heart, really. I said to you before, I would have been borderline delighted with a 1-0 or a 2-1 defeat. If we'd got a draw out of it, it'd have been phenomenal. It kind of went the way you said it was going to go with, you know, you're patient and eventually you just score. And it's not a fluke that you score late on. I could definitely see why. I thought West Ham defended absolutely heroically, quite honest. I didn't mind our setup at all. I appreciate it was defensive. I thought we did really well. Some of the saves Fabianski made, I think other than the header, I can't remember who it was from you, the header at the near post, which was a quick time reaction save, it tipped over the bar. Other than that, I thought they were fairly routine saves, ones that you'd have been annoyed if they'd have gone in. You get the opening goal and that seemed to take the wind out of the sails of West Ham, who were tiring. But that second goal, really sort of killed it for me. But what did you make of the game? I took the time out to text you briefly about it about 24 hours afterwards. And judging by my irritated responses, I still wasn't really over it. But what did you make of it?
Where do I start? I think it was a pretty dominant game played by Leverkusen. I really didn't feel that what I meant by what I said last week, that we will be beating the crap out of you, is basically, to me, it's what's happened. I mean, we had 33-1 shots over the whole game. You can always argue what is a real shot on target and what is just a try, you know.
balloon over the bar. Yeah,
but I was a little bit surprised on how low effort West Ham brought to be able to score a goal. Because I think the main target was to take a 0-0 if possible. And because I mean, it's a difficult game because David Moyes is very good in playing a defensive tactic that is close to what Mourinho has.
He's Mourinho 2.0.
Totally. I was getting annoyed, to be honest, standing on the stands, because I was reminded of that Rome game that I talked about last week, because it was so tight-knit. There was no big rooms, when Schick was playing, I mean, he was like totally harmless because there was nothing to do for him. He could not pull open some rooms left and right because nobody was giving him room to be able to do that. I mean, it's a decent tactic to come in like that, but it's nothing that will keep you in the competition, I think, because you need to score. I was a little bit annoyed of the referee because I think in my opinion, and I know many of your viewers will maybe disagree with me on that, Paqueta needed to be sent off. For the first one, it's a yellow. It's okay, you can give
no
a yellow.
Way.
But for the second, but for the second one, he needed to be sent off because it would have been the second yellow card.
When the referee knew he'd made an enormous mistake with the first one.
No, but I could see that Paqueta got annoyed during the game, and if he's annoyed, he's a little bit too emotional, I think, from time to time.
For a game like that, I think
he was
sort of fat for the first one, and I hope and I think that's probably what the referee thought. I think in the build up to that first one, it was a foul on him. He's lashed out, which is stupid and childish, and particularly in European games. In the Premier League, that probably isn't given as a yellow, probably.
No, I don't think
so. Lash out. The referee probably has a word and said, right, last one of those, next one you're getting booked. Yeah. And I think, the fact that he lashed out and seen a quite a loud, hostile environment probably felt a bit sort of, like hard done by from the foul on him in the build-up. But you have got to keep your head in those situations. He's now suspended for the next game. There's just those elements of like, petulance and immaturity that still run through his game in general, but he's such a good player that you sort of overlook those. But what I would say, I think it's sort of easy to, because let's be honest, it's easy to sort of criticise West Ham's style of play, and I just think Mohamed Kudus should definitely score in the first half when Antonio done Jonathan Tarr for pace. Down the left, played a lovely ball across. Antonio, for some reason, shot first time, needed to take one more touch onto his favoured left foot, and that goes in. And then, frankly, if you've done that, that's the game there for West Ham. We'd have carried on sitting back, and that kind of is the style, really. It's that counter-attacking style. We score loads of goals like that. It's been effective with David Moyes, and really, I'm stunned Kudus didn't do better with that. And then I think then even if you still get your two goals, 2-1, and you're going to the second leg feeling you're pretty good about it. Obviously, Emerson got the yellow card as well. But I honestly think it's so easy to criticise David Moyes and teams generally that play like that against bigger and better teams. You're so good that it's just naive and silly, particularly in the first away leg, to try and like sort of go out and attack. I think as a tie, I think given the players we've got and the quality that you've got in absolute abundance, it would have been silly really for David Moyes to do anything other than that. And let's be honest, other than Kurt Zouma sort of falling asleep for the second goal, 91 minutes into the game, it was pretty damn close to working, and everyone of a West Ham persuasion would have gone into Thursday night's game with a feeling of positivity, not feeling that we were definitely going to win, but it would have been different to the feeling most of us have got now, which is, well, this tie's over. Like, what else can I do Thursday night?
Yeah, but the thing is, if you are a little bit more offensive, you will be able to create set plays, and that is basically what you were missing. You know, create a free kick here, create a corner there. I mean,
you would have scored four.
But still, I mean, what good does it do you if you come to Leverkusen? I mean, okay, it's a proven tactic against us to come in like that, because sometimes we have our difficulties in creating the space we need to be able to score. But in the end, we do, because at the end of the day, those teams still need to run a lot, and those teams still need to be really, really on alert for 90 plus minutes. So this is a strength, and this is why I always think that, yes, the possibility is that you come to Leverkusen and that you will be maybe a little bit too eager, and then in the end you will get everything handed to you. You know, you will
lose 3-0, like, which would have been no good.
3-0, 4-0, like Bremen did. And but what I think that some teams need to be a little bit more, do a little bit more, just because the way we play is so exhausting. Because we are playing like, it's like a handball game that we are playing. Like, we have the one in the middle and everybody is walking around around the box. You know, it's like watching a handball game. And this is tiring for the defensive ends of every team, I think, because the miles you go from left to right, from front to back, it's a lot to do. And, well, at the end, we scored the two goals we needed. I think a 2-0 is a dangerous score, but still, I don't see any. I really don't, because what's happening now in being the champion in Germany is that the squad will change between a European game immensely. Wirtz, Grimaldo, and Frimpong were not in the starting 11 on Sunday, because we want to win the Europa League right now. So you will see like Grimaldo, Frimpong, and Wirtz playing again on Thursday. Boniface will play again on Thursday. So we will come in with the best squad we have, basically, in order to be like, we want to score early this time, because West Ham needs to score early, so there will be space, there will be room, it will be more open, and the big risk for West Ham is basically to be rolled over at the end of the game, like with a 4 or even higher scoreline from Leverkusen. I really see that risk, and this is why I think that if you have the first leg
in Germany, that sort of proves my point, and that disproves what you were just saying. It's like, that is exactly it. The fear of just getting rolled over, particularly in the first leg, that's why David Moyes is so much more defensive. I appreciate it's put us in a difficult predicament, but what people often sort of ignore is the fact that if you just go out and attack like people want to do, you leave yourself more exposed. And well, to be fair, 2-0, with the suspensions and injuries we've got, we haven't got our three best players in Jared Bowen, Emerson and Lucas Paqueta. They are our three best players by a mile. Having all of them, I give us zero hope, like, just based on, even if it was 0-0, without those three players, I wouldn't give us much hope. But if we were 3-0 down or 4-0 down now, there's like no hope whatsoever for the second leg. So, you know, that is the fear from my point of view on Thursday, is that I can't see a way. Not just because you haven't lost a game, that's obviously huge, but I just can't see a way where we beat a team of your quality 2-0 or 3-1. It's just, we're without our three best players as well. Emerson gives a surprise amount of attacking ability. Like, there is no way, barring some sort of weird fluke, but I don't even see that. Like, none of your players are going to lose their heads and get sent off. Like, that's sort of what you're relying on, like a one in a million thing. And I just, there's no, and I'm really positive usually, particularly this season when lots of West Ham fans have been criticising the manager and the style of play. And I'm always, oh, well, you know, this could happen. We've got a chance here. I've got nothing. There's nothing in me going, oh, yeah, this could happen and this is how it could go. And we've got to hope for this. I'm just like, yeah, it's done.
Yeah, I think so too, actually. But yeah, I mean, you always have the risk that when you play the first leg away, that you might be rolled over. But I think
what you're saying is, I told you we'd beat the crap out of you, and we're going to do it again on Thursday.
Yes, basically. Basically, yes. But this time we will even, I think we will even see more goals from us this time. But what I mean by that is, like, don't be too timid when you come to Leverkusen. I mean, it's your style of play and it's okay and you can do it. But that's what I mean with what good does it do you? If you just rely on being able to hold a 0-0 for 90 minutes, because it doesn't mean that you need to be like wide open defensively and that you will get like...
It does if you've got a defense like ours.
Yeah, you don't need to. You don't need that. Just be a little bit more in the offensive. I mean, yes, if you score that one goal, it's different. But
Yeah.
You need to be efficient in the end. That's also true. And I mean, it's difficult because I know what you mean. We had a game against Barcelona a few years ago in Champions League, and we lost the game 1-3. It was a home game, and we were playing the same way. And people were asking, so why don't you just be a little bit more, what's the right word? Why brave? Like, be a bit more brave.
Oh, right.
Be brave, you know, just try, because in the end it can pay off. It can pay off in the end. But I mean,
not with the players we've got. I know what you mean.
I mean that's something I don't want to
you'll get a lot of fans among West Ham fans for saying that, because half of our supporters want David Moyes to go because he's not quite as attacking as you'd like. But listen, it's been absolutely brilliant chatting to you again, Kevin. Just give us a quick run through of sort of expected lineup and formation and stuff for Thursday night, and then a quick score prediction.
I mean, nothing much will change. I think we will play with our best squad. Nobody is injured. Just everybody's okay to go. Bits, Boniface, Frimpong, everybody will play in the starting 11. So I think you will see the best Leverkusen you can see right now. And Xabi Alonso said after we won the championship that we want more, that we want to win the Europa League, and that we want to put our foot down, I think, a little bit to create a statement. Because when you see that Liverpool is, I think, out of the competition after Thursday, you will play against.
Not sure, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean that will be some kind of a miracle, you know. But so then you see that you play against, I don't know, Rome or Milan, and then you play against maybe Bergamo,
Atalanta, or
maybe
Benfica.
Benfica would be interesting because one of our past coaches is there now. I think it will be I don't want to be so rude, but I think it's going to be every positive comment will be from last week will be different today. 4-0, I think, for Leverkusen.
On the night or on aggregate?
On the night. So.
Oh,
Six nil on aggregate.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I think that's my YouTube and podcast title right there, mate. But listen, Kevin, it's genuinely been a pleasure last week and, of course, again this week, chatting to you on the We Are West Ham podcast. We all thank you wholeheartedly for your time, and seriously, congratulations on the title. It was an amazing achievement, and I think that's what brings football to life. for me the most, and that's why I enjoy the opposition view part of this podcast so much, because it's talking to other people like me, for whom supporting their club has been so much of their identity, and it's meant so much of them to them for such a long time. So it's brilliant watching the, just seeing the joy and stuff in the 2 weeks it's been since I followed you on social media, the pictures and stuff from after the game on Sunday, incredible. And
I can say something real quick. Sure. It was my first time being in contact with West Ham, to be honest. And last week, it was I had so many great conversations with West Ham fans. That's what I like about football. You know, when you play European football, you get into contact with fans from other countries, and it was a pleasure to talk to every single one of you fans out there. So really, my hat's off to you. It was great meeting you all, and I wish you all the best for the rest of the season. And maybe we will meet again one day, and hopefully that will be in Champions League, because I think I think your club and your fans deserve to play Champions League. I think Europa League is not it's something I cherish a lot, when you have such a great time with fans from the opposite side. So thank you very much, and thank you very much for the invitation.
Nah, mate, by all means. Listen, Kevin Sheeran there, German journalist and podcaster, a huge Bayer Leverkusen fan. Really enjoyable couple of podcasts this week. And last, thanks to you guys for listening at home. I must admit, from a score prediction point of view, I kind of agree with Kevin. I just can't see what 11 players were going to put out the pitch. Me and Jonesy talked about that, of course, on the podcast earlier this week. I am worried. I'm sort of going as much just to salute West Ham's European journey, if it does come to an end, which I think we all deep down think it will. What 3 years it's been. What a ride this year. Just 2 years, I think it was, since the Lyon game. Probably, you know, the happiest I've ever been in one single moment, especially given that I thought Jared Bowen's winner in Prague was offside. But thanks for listening, everyone. As always, don't forget to follow us on socials at @WeAre_WestHam on Twitter, @WeAreWestHamPod on Instagram. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. This video is going up on there as usual, so subscribe over there, and like, comment, subscribe, do whatever we tell you normally. Email at @WeAreWestHamPod@gmail.com. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you want, 5 stars, and you can buy us a pint if you fancy it. Me and James at buymeacoffee.com/WeAreWestHam. Thursday night could be West Ham's last European game of the season, could be West Ham's last European game for many years. Who knows what is to come this week and beyond, but rest assured that We Are West Ham podcast will be with you every step of the way. Thank you for listening. Thanks once again to Kevin. West Ham are massive up the hammers, and we'll speak to you later this week.
Hi, this is Tony Cotty, and you're listening to the We Are West Ham podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.